Chapter 6. When we got back to Nazareth, we expected to find Joshua's mother hysterical with worry. But on the contrary, she had gathered Joshua's brothers and sisters outside of their house, lined them up, and was washing their faces and hands as if preparing them for the Sabbath meal. "Joshua, help me get the little ones ready. We are all going to Sepphoris." Joshua was shocked. "We are? The whole village is going to ask the Romans to release Joseph." James was the only one of the children who seemed to understand what had happened to their father. There were tear tracks on his cheeks. I put my arm around his shoulders. "He'll be fine," I said, trying to sound cheerful. "Your father is strong. They'll have to torture him for days before he gives up the ghost." I smiled encouragingly. James broke out of my embrace and ran into the house, crying. Mary turned and glared at me. "Shouldn't you be with your family, Biff?" Oh, my breaking heart, my bruised ego. Even though Mary had taken position as my emergency backup wife, I was crestfallen at her disapproval. And to my credit, not once during that time of trouble did I wish harm to come to Joseph. Not once. After all, I was still too young to take a wife, and some creepy elder would swoop Mary up before I had a chance to rescue her if Joseph died before I was 14. "Why don't you go get Maggie?" Joshua suggested, taking only a second from his mission of scrubbing the skin off his brother Judah's face. "Her family will want to go with us." "Sure," I said, and I scampered off to the blacksmith shop in search of approval from my primary wife-to-be. When I arrived, Maggie was sitting outside of her father's shop with her brothers and sisters. She looked as frightened as she had when we first witnessed the murder. I wanted to throw my arms around her to comfort her. "We have a plan," I said. "I mean, Joshua has a plan. Are you going to Sepphoris with everyone else?" "The whole family," she said. "My father has made nails for Joseph. They're friends." She tossed her head, pointing toward the open shed that housed her father's forge. Two men were working over the forge. "Go ahead, Biff. You and Joshua, go on ahead. We'll be along later." She started waving me away and mouthing words silently to me, which I didn't pick up. "What are you saying? What? What?" "And who is your friend, Maggie?" A man's voice, coming from near the forge. I looked over and suddenly realized what Maggie had been trying to tell me. "Uncle Jeremiah, this is Levi Bar Alphaeus. We call him Biff. He has to go now." I started backing away from the killer. "Yes, I have to go." I looked at Maggie, not knowing what to do. "We'll see you in Sepphoris," Maggie said. "Right," I said. Then I turned and dashed away, feeling more like a coward than I ever have in my life. When we got back to Sepphoris, there was a large gathering of Jews, perhaps 200, outside of the city walls. Most I recognized as being from Nazareth. No mob mentality here, more a fearful gathering. More than half of those gathered were women and children. In the middle of the crowd, a contingent of a dozen Roman soldiers pushed back the onlookers while two slaves dug a grave. Like my own people, the Romans did not dally with their dead. Unless there was a battle ongoing, Roman soldiers were often put in the ground before the corpse was cool. Joshua and I spotted Maggie standing between her father and her murderous uncle at the edge of the crowd. Joshua took off toward her. I followed, but before I got close, Joshua had taken Maggie's hand and dragged her into the midst of the crowd. I could see Jeremiah trying to follow them. I dove into the mass and crawled under people's feet until I came upon a pair of hobnail boots, which indicated the lower end of a Roman soldier. The other end, equally Roman, was scowling at me. I stood up. "Semper Fido," I said in my best Latin, followed by my most charming smile. The soldier scowled further. Suddenly, there was a smell of flowers in my nose, and sweet, warm lips brushed my ear. "I think you just said, 'always dog,'" Maggie whispered. "That would be why he's looking so unpleasant then," I said out of the side of my charming smile. In my other ear, another familiar, if not so sweet, whisper. "Sing, Biff. Remember the plan," Joshua said. "Right." And so I let loose one of my famous dirges. "La, la, la, hey, Roman guy, Too bad about your getting stabbed. La la la. It's probably not a message from God or nothing. La la la. Telling you that maybe you should have gone home. La la la. Instead of oppressing the chosen people who God his own self has said that he likes better than you. Fa la 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 la. The soldier didn't speak Aramaic, so the lyrics didn't move him as I had hoped, but I think the hypnotic toe-tappiness of the melody was starting to get to him. I plunged into my second verse. La, 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 didn't we tell you that you shouldn't eat pork? La, la, although looking at wounds in your chest, a dietary change might not have made that big a difference. Boom, chaka-laka-laka, boom, chaka-laka-laka, boom, chaka-laka-lak-lak. Come on, you know the words. Enough! The soldier was yanked aside, and Gaius Justus Gallicus stood before us, flanked by two of his officers. Behind him, stretched out on the ground, was the body of the dead soldier. Well done, Biff, Joshua whispered. We're offering our services as professional mourners, I said with a grin, which the centurion was eager not to return. That soldier doesn't need mourners. He has avengers. A voice from the crowd. See here, centurion, release Joseph of Nazareth. He is no murderer. Justice turned and the crowd parted, leaving a path between him and the man who had spoken up. It was Ibn, the Pharisee, standing with several other Pharisees from Nazareth. Would you take his place? Justice asked. The Pharisee backed away, his resolve melting quickly under the threat. Well? Justice stepped forward and the crowd parted around him. You speak for your people, Pharisee. Tell them to give me a killer, or would you rather I crucify Jews until I get the right one? Ibn was flustered now and began jabbering a mishmash of verses from the Torah. I looked around and saw Maggie's uncle Jeremiah standing only a few paces behind me. When I caught his eye, he slipped his hand under his shirt, to the haft of a knife, I had no doubt. Joseph didn't kill that soldier, Joshua shouted. Justice turned to him, and the Pharisees took the opportunity to scramble to the back of the crowd. I know that, Justice said. You do? Of course, boy. No carpenter killed that soldier. How do you know that? I asked. Justice motioned to one of his legionnaires, and the soldier came forward carrying a small basket. The centurion nodded, and the soldier upended the basket. The stone effigy of Apollo's severed penis thudded to the ground in front of us. Uh-oh, I said. Because it was a stone cutter, Justice said. My, that is impressive, Maggie said. I noticed that Joshua was edging toward the body of the soldier. I needed to distract Justice. Aha, I said. Someone beat the soldier to death with a stone willy. Obviously the work of a Greek or a Samaritan. No Jew would touch such a thing. They wouldn't? Maggie asked. Geez, Maggie. I think you have something to tell me, boy, Justice said. Joshua had laid his hands on the dead soldier.